This podcast has been paid for by Olympus Corporation of the Americas. The views and experiences shared are those of Dr. Nalini Gouda and Dr. Neil Parikh, paid consultants of Olympus Corporation and its affiliates. Olympus makes no representations regarding the accuracy or applicability of the content and disclaims all liability arising from its use. Product performance may vary, and techniques, instruments, and clinical decisions are unique to each facility and practitioner. Always refer to the instructions for use and applicable labeling for guidance, risks, and cautions.
Hi everyone, this is Tom Salami. Welcome back to the Olympus Talks podcast. We've got a great conversation coming up with two leading GI endoscopists. We're going to talk about the strains and the challenges that they have in meeting patient demand. And very happy to be joined by Diane Locker. She is Director of Strategic Marketing at Olympus. Diane, this was a great conversation. Thanks for putting it together.
My pleasure. It really was a fantastic conversation. We really wanted to hear these two physicians talk about what it means to be an independent physician practicing in an ambulatory endoscopy center in this current market that there's so much demand. And, you know, patients are getting screened earlier, and there are unique nuances to both the business of endoscopy in an ambulatory center and the what it means to be an independent physician delivering patient care. So they talked about all of the nuances, the differences in the business models, how they evaluate technologies, and more importantly, how they deliver care to their patients in the center and why it's different.
Absolutely. We spoke with Dr. Nalini Gouda. He's of GI Associates. He's in Wisconsin. And Dr. Neil Parikh, who is with CTGI, that's Connecticut, and he's also with the GI Alliance. And they both represent sort of different types of businesses, different types of providers of endoscopy. This was a treat for me because I think sometimes I get an echo chamber and I talk to just folks in the medtech industry about medtech. But it's really great to converse with the people on the, I want to say front lines, but people who are patient forward and really talking with patients and dealing with patients and solving their problems. You must really enjoy the opportunity as well to really talk with them. And I know you do frequently talk with clinicians and providers to really understand how your technology can help them.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. I actually really do enjoy learning so much about what are their needs. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's really beyond products and technology. That's a given. We have that. We can support them for all of their needs throughout the procedure. But we're looking for what else? What are the needs of the endoscopy center versus the needs of the hospital in terms of education, supporting their staff, you know, all the things that are just different in this kind of a setting. Sometimes mm-hmm. they have high staff turnover, so their educational needs are different. Sometimes the staff wears multiple hats and they're moving with just efficiency in order to ensure that the patient experience is seamless. And there's a lot of noise, right? There's other things that have to happen in the background of a business. And we want to figure out, well, how do we help there? You know, what are the things that they need? What I've heard from them most commonly is that it comes back to educating and onboarding staff. Mm-hmm. And those are areas that I've really honed in on. And you heard it today as well, that it's something different outside of product. What else can we do? What can we do better? And how do we help them? So it's fascinating. It's a really interesting business segment to learn about and to hear from the leaders in the field.
All right, that's well said, Diane. Let's get this conversation started. Once again, we spoke with Dr. Nalini Gouda. He is of GI Associates, and Dr. Neil Parikh. He is with CTGI and the GI Alliance. Welcome to Olympus Talks, the podcast that brings you to the forefront of medical technologies as we explore advancements and innovations in GI. This 8-episode series features talks with healthcare professionals, patients, and Olympus subject matter experts. Listen as they dive into various aspects of GI health, focused on improving patient outcomes through best practices. Stay tuned for conversations designed to educate, inspire, and inform. Well, Dr. Nalini Gouda and Neil Parikh, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining Diane and myself for this conversation. We always love to learn a little bit about our folks before we tackle the interesting issues of medical devices. Could Dr. Gouda, could you kick us off? Tell us how you became Dr. Gouda. How did you find your way into medicine?
I was trained in India and started working in gastroenterology. That's where I developed interest into it. And then when I came to the United States, did my residency and worked with some brilliant gastroenterologists that led my path here. I work at Milwaukee for a large independent private practice group. We're about 34 gastroenterologists. I'm currently the president of the practice. And I'm also involved with some academic aspects. So I serve currently as the program director for our advanced endoscopy fellowship and hold the title of a clinical adjunct professor at University of Wisconsin.
And what drew you to gastroenterology? What's exciting about it? What got you interested?
It's a great field. There's a lot that you can see, do, a lot of innovations, a lot of excitement, and it's always gratifying to see that you actually make a difference in someone's life.
Fantastic. And Dr. Parikh, how'd you find your way into medicine?
Sure. So I was born in New York, grew up in Connecticut, and then I went to Hopkins for college, actually thinking writing seminars, which is a journalism major. And then shifted and did some pre-med classes at some point. And and then from there, medical school and residency was in Mount Sinai in New York. Mount Sinai is a huge GI powerhouse. And so being both a med student and a resident there, you got exposure to a lot of liver disease and gastroenterology, a lot of inflammatory bowel disease specifically. And that kind of shifted my direction in medicine. And then I've been now in practice here in Connecticut for 10 years at Connecticut GI, which is part of the GI Alliance.
And Diane, we met you at the intro, but how did you find your way to Olympus?
Well, my background is in several different areas of healthcare, primarily dermatology and respiratory. And I joined the Olympus GI marketing team about 3 years ago as the director of strategic marketing. So my role is focused around supporting the ambulatory endoscopy center. We essentially want to understand their unique needs and determine how we can help support them to deliver high quality patient care.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, let's get into tackling some of these interesting topics. I think one thing we're seeing in medical devices is certainly the innovation in technology continues, but the innovation in healthcare delivery is keeping pace, and we're finding new ways to treat more patients. And one of those is through the independent practices. We're going to talk about the ambulatory endoscopy centers in a bit. How has the industry and clinicians, I think, have gone a long way in getting out the public, getting out word to the public about ensuring or asking people to get screened, and now asking people to get screened at an earlier age? I'm wondering, Dr. Parikh, maybe you can start. What impact have those campaigns have? Are you seeing an increase in patients? And do you see a trajectory one way or the other going forward with people looking to get screened for serious diseases?
Yeah, I mean, we can start with colon cancer, right? We've seen, at least in my clinical trajectory, a huge marketing shift. And it's been fantastic collaboration. We've seen industry, both the device, pharmaceutical world, the academic institutions, our national organizations, and independent providers all saying, hey, we're seeing more and more early onset colorectal cancer. We need to do something about this. And I think the literature, as we knew anecdotally, finally came when the American Cancer Society finally decided to change the guidelines and start, you know, earlier rather than 50, make 45 the new number. And that happened. Oh, now it seems like close to a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And with that 50 to 45, we've seen a significant uptick in the demand. And right in the middle of that, as Nalini will attest to, we got COVID, right? So we not only had this huge new percentage of patients who needed to be screened, mm-hmm. and COVID happened, which put a pause and really put a strain on access. And I think at this point, we are still playing catch up. So not only are there a lot of patients who want to be screened, we still also need to reach more people who need to be screened.
Dr. Gouda, talk a bit about the role of the independent physicians and the ambulatory endoscopy centers in improving that access to screening. I didn't realize we still had a backlog. I'm curious if you're seeing the same thing where you are, and how do centers like yours help meet that?
So it's a great question. As Dr. Parikh alluded to, the COVID did not help us with the backlogs. You know, there was already a diminishing pool of gastroenterologists, and COVID made their retirements early. So we had a decreasing pool of gastroenterologists. The number of gastroenterologists we put out every year, the fellowship numbers haven't changed significantly. So overall, the number of providers has at best shrunk and has not kept up with the demand. The demand obviously did go up. As independent practitioners, we have a little more leeway. We open our centers early. We can close them a little later. Our throughput is much quicker. Our turnaround time between procedures is shorter. And because you are an independent provider, you have more skin in the game, so you tend to move a little more throughput than typical large institutions. So we have been doing our fair share to catch up. And the problem is that the lack of access is not uniform throughout the country. There are a few areas where, to begin with, the screening programs have been pretty robust, and some areas where they have not been robust. And there are these colonoscopy deserts where we did not make much dent. So there is access issues, but it's not, again, uniform and universal. It's various pockets experience, variations in access. But access is a problem. And also public sentiment of going back for surveillance and all is also, you know, somewhat spotty at times, because we do have last minute cancellations, no shows. That does not make it any easier for people who are waiting to get in. And I'd be curious to know if that's the same thing that Dr. Parikh experiences in Connecticut as we do in Wisconsin.
Well, it's my job to ask the questions, but you may answer the question, Dr. Parikh.
Thank you, Tal. No, Dr. Gouda, I echo those sentiments completely. We are fortunate in the Northeast where we are able to educate the values of screening to get the numbers to not where we need to be, but it's at least not a screening desert, as you called it. But we still have those obstacles in terms of scheduling, getting patients here, and then still having some barriers to truly completing the screening. I think access, as you mentioned, is the primary driver, right? And I think when I was first invited to this podcast, I liked how it's called Ambulatory Endoscopy Center. I traditionally was called ASC, but I actually think I may change that to AEC, because Dr. Gouda, as you mentioned, when you come to the Ambulatory Endoscopy Center, everybody there is focused on one task, which is endoscopy, as opposed to being in a multi-specialty facility. It's not just the physicians. It's really a team approach. It's the nursing staff, the technicians, the anesthesia staff. It's everybody doing one goal. And I think that's what makes, as Dr. Gouda alluded to, makes us easier for us to shorten that, you know, that gap, or make it more efficient to get more throughput through for the patients. It's access. It ends up being cost, which we'll probably talk about, and then patient satisfaction. I think all three of those, which are probably the major pain points in gastroenterology right now, all are solved by AEC, which I'm going to definitely steal after this.
I might as well. I had to check my notes also, because I've always said AEC, but it is a lot more descriptive and a lot less intimidating is not the right word, but a lot more precise in what's going on. I think people are more open to an endoscopy center versus a surgical center. Dr. Gouda, can you help define for me the endoscopy desert situation?
It's not a term that coined by me, but you know, this is what we use. I, on my other hat, I also serve on the governing council of the American Society of GI Endoscopy. So we're looking at the population, how it needs to be covered. So the definition is that within a 15-mile radius, if you cannot go get your procedure done, that is termed a desert, right? So, you know, we are one of the most advanced nations, so you'd think access to care should be there for everyone. So if that's the case, and it could be anybody, it could be a surgeon, it could be a gastroenterologist, somebody who can do it is what we're looking at. And, you know, if you look at the distribution, some areas like metropolitan cities have a lot of people doing, so it's not as such of a problem, but you go to rural areas and various states, you know, have various access points there, it is still a real issue.
Interesting. And Dr. Parikh, you mentioned the benefits of having the procedures done in an AEC versus a hospital as you're going through the benefits. I mean, just something as simple as parking and getting into the building easily. Dr. Guda, you said the 10 to 15 mile radius thing. I put all that together. Like, is there a sweet spot for folks to get them to undergo a procedure that they may not determine as seriously as they should? Like, are you looking like a half hour or 45 minutes? Like, is there a period of time? Like, look, if you're going to take too much time out of their day, they're going to be a lot less likely to do it than if we have a very short window of parking and logistics. Again, just getting into the room for the treatment.
So you're right. I think it's the unpredictability, right? If you say you're going to spend all day, then they're like, what am I doing all day? But if you say you come at 8 o'clock, your procedure will be done. You're done by 10 o'clock and you go home. That's a much more predictable thing. And in the ambulatory endoscopy centers, that's a lot more in your control as opposed to an ambulatory surgery center or a hospital-based facility where, you know, there's always another emergency or something more serious that trumps over your routine screening colonoscopy. Not that screening colonoscopy is any less important, but, you know, there's a potential that you could be pumped. Complex procedures take longer time. And also, as you alluded to here, we are geared to doing one thing, endoscopy. And so the throughput from the time you enter to the time you leave, everybody is geared to one thing. The process of explaining the procedure to the anesthesia provider coming, assessing the patients, to getting it done, it's all streamlined and everybody knows what exactly they're doing. So there's not so much about cross covering. So it runs much more efficiently that way.
And Dr. Parikh, the predictability for the physician, I'm sure, is just as important as well. I mean, your practice is also caught up if someone can't find a parking space or got stuck in traffic because they have to drive an hour or something of that ilk. So what are the benefits for a physician working in an ASC, independently owned ASC? How does it compare, if you would, that toward working in a more quote-unquote traditional healthcare setting?
Sure, and I'll take it one step back now and say that the parking is everybody. It's not only the patient, but or the patient's family member. It's also the nursing staff. It's everybody. Mm-hmm. And parking seems silly, but just to be able to have parking where you walk from your car within 5 feet into the building gets rid of a lot of variables, right? And I would say one endoscopy requires a technician, the nurse, the patient's ride, and the physician anesthesia. So that's seven people. Now, if seven people have to look for parking in a parking garage, it's a lot more variability, right? And again, I'm exaggerating. I'm being dramatic because I tend to be. But it's the same concept, right? You know, you're adding a lot more potential inefficiency. For the physician, like Dr. Guda, I work in both. You know, we have a few AECs that are owned by our practice, and we also do cover tertiary care hospitals in the region. And so I do end up covering being in both places. So I think there are benefits and critical importance to both setups. The AEC specifically for routine procedures allows for, I believe, a more patient-centered patient satisfaction experience, okay? Because of these little things that are different. The bowel preparation, the anesthesia, the physicians are going to be similar in any place you go, but it's the parking. It's the time to arrival. It's where their family members can wait for the procedure. You know, is it right outside and can they be in recovery within, you know, a minute once you're waking up versus, you know, a larger facility where the hospital pack you and the hospital operating room, the hospital waiting room are on different floors. So those things matter. For the physician, it really comes down to these things.
So Diane, a question to you about the ambulatory endoscopy center label. The two physicians agree it's a great way to describe what's going on there. How do you view it as someone who's working with these centers, with these physicians? Do you think it's more descriptive, and do you think it helps give a little precision to the messaging of folks getting screening with an endoscopy versus a surgery?
I do. I think that the term ambulatory endoscopy center is important. That's what we've been using as well. And I think even as it relates to the patient knows an outpatient center, they know orthopedics, they know other specialties. This is specifically a center dedicated to endoscopy. Mm-hmm. And there's a different feeling for the patient when the focus is on endoscopy for them. And I think it's really important to make that distinction.
One thing I wanted to unpack was the different structures of ASCs. Dr. Guda, you're an independent practitioner. Talk a bit about how you work, what your corporate and clinical structure like. And then Dr. Parikh, I'd like to get the same answer from you, although I'll re-ask the question. Dr. Guda, tell us a bit about your practice and its structure.
So thanks, Tom. We are one of the largest GI practices. When I first started, we were about a 12-member practice. Now we're about 34 members in our practice. We have continued to grow, but we remain independent, though we have very close affiliations with our other healthcare partners in the area. We operate our own ambulatory endoscopy centers, some independently and some jointly with the healthcare system, so that we provide access to all the patients we serve in southeastern Wisconsin. The advantage that I feel in being independent is that we have a lot more freedom. With freedom, of course, comes the responsibility, and that's why we engage ourselves actively with the hospitals, the hospital committees, looking at the needs so that we collaborate and work with them together. I think it also provides, with the freedom also, you know, the providers do feel that they own the practice, so they take more ownership responsibility. They have more skin in the game, if you will. And I think the decisions come much quicker, faster. We all get together. If the decision is something that we feel makes sense, we move forward and the decisions are made. So as opposed to the larger healthcare systems that we have to go through several layers of meetings and processes.
Dr. Parikh, how about on your side? Talk a bit about the structure of your organization.
Yeah, certainly, Tom. Similar to Dr. Guda, we've been independent. So I want to say it was the 27th or 28th gastroenterologist joined this group in Connecticut exactly 10 years ago. And in 2023, January, we'd ballooned to 87 gastroenterologists in Wow. Connecticut, which made us at that point the second largest independent GI group other than, I think, Minnesota GI, MinGI. At that point, we made a decision to partner up with the GI Alliance. And so one of the things we are now, so now we're strategic partners under the GI Alliance with Cardinal Health. So one of the beauties of that is that, you know, and we don't even get the semantics of private equity, not private equity, but we're not private equity owned. We are now strategic partner with an organization that really supports what we want to do. Mm-hmm. But yet we maintain our local independence. So every region or SBU, small business unit, operates with its own local board, local decision making. But then we work with other regional boards where we represent our viewpoint. But the real beauty, I think, and I'm not trying to sound like a car salesman for the GI Alliance, but the real beauty of what I get to do is that every quarter I meet with seven endoscopists across the country, practice everywhere, and we talk about what works and what doesn't work for us. And when we want to vet a technology, vet a process, we don't need to reinvent the wheel every time. So we, as part of our innovation committee for the Alliance, we really get to put ourselves out there, and we don't have to necessarily go through the process. It's labor intensive to do feasibility pilots. We can distribute that across the country and learn from each other.
So we, to put in a last plug to that, I think, you know, each system has its own benefits. While we maintain our independence, the large GI practices also have a similar model where we get together, share best practices and experiences from each other. So we, each one of us, don't have to reinvent the wheel. If Dr. Mm-hmm. Parikh says this works well, we will be willing to adopt, and, you know, we have various models to do it. So
either model, it would seem to be a real selling point to be able to take the time to assess where you're at and where you're going and what you can do better, and you're not mired in some of the bureaucracy that I hear from other physicians. Speak, if you would, just generally about the state of endoscopists in terms of burnout and other concerns. Is it greater or lesser than other specialties that we're hearing a lot of doctors who are tired of checking boxes on EMRs and such, and just working late into the evening, keeping their records? So what's the field like for endoscopy? Dr. Gouda, if you want to kick that one off.
So endoscopists, I think, are somewhere smack in the middle of the burnouts, and I think COVID actually increased our burnout in those physicians that retire. We are hoping with the innovations, especially in the AI, with the ambient listening and systems that are coming in, I think the process is getting better in terms of documentation. We are hoping some of these new AI models to reduce the burden of prior authorization would also help. Right now, the cost of running practices are ballooning because of all these regulatory bureaucratic processes that mm-hmm. take it forever to get something done. But I think being independent, you're actually able to mold your schedule to your form, like depending on your pace, what you want to do, what could be done. So the burnout rates, I feel, are less because we're not literally breathing in. We don't school anybody and say you haven't done your share of this many procedures or patients. We try to work with them. It's a smaller group, so we understand if somebody is going through a personal, you know, issue. It's not like you are one of 2,000 physicians and, you know, you're somehow not looking right in terms of the metrics of your output. So I feel that, practices that are independent have a little more, room to make those adjustments as opposed to a large corporate structure where you cannot make changes because, all the HR rules on the complexities, not that anybody has anything against, but I think that's where I feel like the burnout rates are lower in independent practices. Again, we're not talking about one or two physician independent practices because those are going to be very hard to run based on the current models. You know, those don't exist as long as I know. There are very, very few practices that have one or two physicians. Most single large practices have at least a few physicians in the practices so that they can all share the burden.
And Dr. Parikh, how about on your end? What do you see from your perspective, from your fellow endoscopists?
Yeah, no, I always joke when I talk about burnout, I feel like it depends on the age of my audience, right? So my physician partners who are over the age of 60 believe that everybody younger is just slacking and doesn't have work ethic. And then the people who are under the age of, I can't say young now because, you know, I'm in my 40s, but under the age of 30, just believe that the older generation doesn't understand work-life balance. So burnout's it's a tricky topic. But 100% agree with Dr. Gouda. I think being independent is key. I think as an independent physician, we are, I believe, less likely to burn out than our non-independent colleagues. Because like Dr. Gouda mentioned, if I have something comes up, I have a partner I can text and say, hey, can you cover this? Can I do this? Or I don't have to report to multiple layers of people who are not necessarily doing what I'm doing every day. Mm-hmm. And I think, and again, every system has pluses and benefits and pluses and minuses, but that independent physician part is key. And I really feel that on a day-to-day basis because I can remain doing what I want to do, which is take care of patients without having to answer on a monthly, weekly basis to multiple non-clinical people. The second point Dr. Guda mentioned, which is great, is ambient listening. I think there's a lot of innovation help that's going to help us with burnout. Just starting tomorrow in our endoscopy suite, we're going to have ambient listening, which will be going from me finishing procedure, typing, you know, templates, to me talking during the procedure. You know, and there'll be some barriers and there'll be some kinks we got to work out, but the technology done right will assist us with burnout.
Diane, this must be a valuable conversation for you to hear from these physicians about what their pain points are. How does Olympus look to help these folks in the future?
I mean, a lot of it, I think they've covered beautifully. So technology is going to continue to evolve and help to streamline their activities and hopefully, you know, just take away some of the more mundane tasks, but yet be, you know, accurate. So we look forward to seeing that in the future. But, you know, I think overall it is about technology development, but it's also about understanding, you know, very closely what's important and what works for the physician so that, you know, we can create answers that are going to suit their needs rather than developing technology that doesn't have a place.
Absolutely. No, great, great, great point. So we're seeing that evolution in the healthcare facilities in what we're calling them. I think that's great. And of course, as I alluded to up top, we're seeing a lot of innovation in the technology that's coming to assist with endoscopies. Talking about AI, we've got new imaging technologies, new innovative devices. Dr. Guda, talk a bit, if you would, how AECs, independent entities, view these new technologies and how they're able to bring them into the practice. I don't know if it's any different than it would be at a traditional, again, quote unquote, traditional healthcare setting.
Sure. I think it's a great question. It's something that we grapple all the time. Obviously, technology is moving at a fast pace. There's several innovations that are coming out. As Diane said, you know, right now my focus is on focusing only on the endoscopy center. So AEC makes much more sense because healthcare, if you take as a broad term, there are a lot of changes, a lot of innovations going on. So if we focus to just the AECs, it makes my life a little easier. As an independent practice, I think it's a little more, we are a little more nimble. I don't have to go through the same bureaucracy and budgeting and finance issues that a large healthcare organization has to go through. I can pivot much quicker and change the course much quicker in an independent practice as opposed to a larger healthcare system where there are several issues that need to be taken into consideration. So that way, I think the smaller organizations can adapt a little more quicker than the larger organizations. Larger organizations, of course, obviously have deeper pockets. Mm-hmm. So there is certainly an advantage there when it comes to initial capital and spending. But both of them have their own ups and downs. And, you know, being in a large practice, I feel like we can adapt it a little more quicker. I don't have to go through the same multiple layers of command before I can implement it. As long as we know that the product that we're implementing is good, it's going to help the patients, it's going to help me and also help the bottom line of our operations, I think it's easier to implement.
That's great. And Dr. Preakle, same question to you. I do like the weighing of the nimbleness of a small organization versus the deep pockets of a big organization. I can see benefits to both. How does that balance out for you? And as a physician, how are you, because you have so much more influence on the purchasing, how much time do you spend keeping up on these new technologies and seeing what will work for you and what won't, and putting yourself in a position to analyze your options?
Yeah, no, I think first off, you need a partnership, right? You need the larger healthcare systems to buy in. And I 100% feel like we ourselves, the physicians, our patients all benefit from that partnership. You know, you need both financial capital and intellectual capital from healthcare system. I think the real value of an AEC when it comes to innovation is what both Diane and Dr. Guda alluded to. It's a single specialty workflow, right? It's built just for one process and one goal. So when you're at board meetings for an AEC, you're at budget meetings for an AEC versus board meetings or budget meetings that we have for our healthcare systems, everybody's talking endoscopy, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone understands the basic language already. It's a lot easier pitch, right? When you pitch to VCs, you pitch to capital groups. If the terminology and language is the same from the get-go, you're already 30% the way there. That's step one. Dr. Guda mentioned the nimbleness, right? I think mm-hmm. this is really key. At this rate, something new is coming in endoscopy, I would say, every 35 days.
Wow.
Okay. I've been chief of the GI division at our local hospital. It is challenging to not only propose a new technology every 35 days, but the number of people whose approval we need for correct reasons, right? To vet the technology, get the budget approved, you usually have to submit a budget a year in advance. So if we're talking a year in advance budget submission and technology changes rapidly, you just can't keep up. Mm-hmm. So what we've done here in Connecticut is we're using our AECs as our innovation playground, right? Whether it's computer-aided detection of polyps, artificial intelligence, we can pilot stuff faster in our AECs and then bring that data to our healthcare system and say, hey, this does work. It's better for the patient. We've done it. We've done a feasibility pilot. These are our results.
That's really clever. Diane, how does Olympus sort of interact with ASCs when it comes to getting them up to date on all these new technologies? That rate of new product innovation introduction is mind blowing. Actually, how do you engage with these players?
That's a great question. We provide a portfolio approach, so that includes things like imaging technologies, devices to increase adenoma detection rates, product service, infection prevention solutions, etc. But beyond the product, we try to help with the efficiencies, such as training and onboarding for new staff through virtual training, on-site clinical and education teams, infection prevention and technical support teams. We want to ensure that the center and the care providers can focus on the patient, and we look for those other areas where we can help improve that efficiency for them.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. Well, let's look toward the future. Where do you see independent physicians and ASCs? What role do you see them in delivering care, in providing the tests that need to be done? Dr. Guda, do you see a lot more procedures or tests coming your way? I know you've got a backlog you're dealing with right now. What do you see happening in the future?
In terms of colorectal cancer screening, we all advocate that any form of screening is better than none, though we all believe at this time the optical colonoscopy or the conventional colonoscopy is probably the easiest and the best, because one procedure, not only do you detect a precancerous lesion, but you also address it at the same time. For those who are unwilling or cannot, obviously there are other tests, including the stool-based testing, the multi-stool DNA testing, and now there's a new blood test that's coming out. So these are other options for those who cannot get to. So you could argue that on a population level, they get some form of screening, and those positive tests need to be followed through, though the data are not very robust that people who are positive are all following through. We still have a lot of people who do not want to come and get their procedures done. Now they're roaming around with a positive test. That puts an onus on the system that has ordered these tests. So we do our best to try to get them in within 30 to 60 days of a positive test. There's no gold standard, but we believe that a positive test needs to be followed through. And we make every effort in doing so. And I'm sure with technologies and improvements that are coming, we might get through a more rapid throughput, especially with AI coming. I think our documentation, pre-procedure, prior authorizations, and the hurdles that we routinely face will probably get easier. And as Diane mentioned, I think one of the pain points is that as we have rotational staff, you know, the staff do not linger around for too long. There are too many opportunities. So onboarding, training of the staff to bring them up to speed, because remember, we want to do this right. So infection prevention, doing the procedure right are important. So training is a critical component. There we appreciate the partnership of the industry. Not only the industry partnership is important for innovation and bringing new technologies, but also we appreciate their role and support in terms of training the technicians and, you know, keeping them up to pace with the new technologies.
I will add my editorial comment here. I've had the procedure done at an AEC, and the procedure's not a big deal. Folks, if you're hesitating for any reason out of concern, just don't. It's not a big deal. Anyway, Dr. Parikh, I love the idea that you're using the ASCs as sort of testing places for new technologies. What do you see coming your way in terms of maybe new opportunities for new tests that can be done in these spaces? Do you see the menu of things you're able to offer growing in the future?
Yeah, no. I think traditionally the AEC has been in the colorectal vertical, right? Reflux, abdominal pain. I think it's probably already happening in places across the country, but I think the next few verticals you'll see is pancreatic biliary. Mm-hmm. You'll see endobariatrics. And you'll see more Barrett therapy. So pancreatic biliary, I definitely foresee a future, at least during our clinical practice, of endoscopic ultrasound happening in the AEC. I think endobariatrics, you're seeing more and more of these freestanding, almost concierge-driven endoscopic bariatric sites opening up, very similar to what an AEC is and does. So I think that translates well. And I believe Barrett's radiofrequency ablation or other therapies, cryotherapy, I think that's going to shift to the AEC.
Interesting.
The onus is going to be on the physician to choose the right patient, right? You know, choose the right patient that should be either hospital-based or AEC-based. But up until now, we've said, oh, if you're getting this procedure done, automatically you're at the hospital. That won't be the case anymore.
Interesting. And Diane, last question to you. What role does Olympus play in supporting all of this infrastructure, this ecosystem, and maybe guiding the transition in the direction Drs. Parikh and Guda have suggested?
It's exactly correct that procedures are rapidly migrating into the AEC, and as has happened with other verticals, more complex procedures will continue to do the same. And so our role is to stay close to the physicians, to understand what that means for the centers and how they're going to deploy that technology. Mm-hmm. Where can we step in to help with the training process beyond the role of the equipment, which of course we can support? What else? We're always asking ourselves, what else do they need and what else can we do? So it really does come down to heavily focused on training and education, making sure the staff is prepared and comfortable, and helping understand exactly how they can migrate towards those new procedures that will be coming at some point in the future. So really our focus is on staying close to the physicians, close to the practice, and being able to ebb and flow and grow with them.
That's great. Very well ended. A very important trend. Healthcare needs to be more accessible and in more conveniently located places like this. So it's an important conversation.
May I add one thing to
absolutely, Dr. Guda, please.
So I agree with Dr. Parikh about other verticals moving into AACs. And I think the rate limiting step right now for us is also the cost, right? So some of these procedures can be done safely at AACs, but the reimbursement for these procedures at the AAC levels are so low that the AACs cannot afford to do these procedures because there's no reimbursement for some of these. That's why we shift them to the traditional hospital-based surgery centers for these procedures to be done. I think that's where the partnership between the physicians, the large societies that the physicians belong to, and the industry, you know, will help in going and talking to our legislators and trying to change that regulation. So at the end of the day, we would like to deliver healthcare that is not only good, but also, you know, affordable. And I think, you know, moving them to AACs for appropriate patients, if we have the right reimbursement, would make it easier. And I think all of us have to work on this.
Well, this has been a fantastic overview, Dr. Neil Parikh, Dr. Nalini Gouda. Thank you for joining us on Olympus Talks.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Olympus Talks podcast. Thanks, of course, to our corporate partner, Olympus, for working with us and making this great podcast series. If you'd like to find the other episodes of Olympus Talks, please visit olympusamerica.com/podcasts. Of course, we'd also love you to follow our Device Talks podcast network, you know, so you don't miss a future episode of Olympus Talks. Also, connect with Device Talks on LinkedIn. Connect with myself, Tom Salemi, I'm editorial director, and our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. So we'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations and help you find additional episodes of Olympus Talks. Well, that's it, folks. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Olympus Talks podcast.